Imagine standing on a beach trying to catch the entire ocean in a single drinking glass. You can scoop up the water, sure. You can analyze the salt content, measure the temperature, and say, "I hold the ocean." But do you? Or do you just hold a very small, very contained sample of something that by its very nature refuses to be contained? We do this with the universe. We do this with love. And most aggressively, we do this with God.
It's the human condition, isn't it? We are terrified of the vastness, so we build little containers. We label them, we organize them, and then we convince ourselves that the label is the thing itself.
Exactly. And that tension between the map we draw and the territory we're actually walking on is the subject of today's deep dive. We are looking at a fascinating figure from the Philippines, a man named Ninox Antoliaho. He's a writer, a thinker, but he's also, and I love this detail, a restaurateur. He's the mind behind the Stone Grill restaurant.
Which is such a perfect entry point for his philosophy, honestly. Because think about the concept of a stone grill. You are given the raw ingredients and a hot stone, and you participate in the process. You don't just sit back and have a finished product delivered to you. You have to engage with the heat. And that is exactly how Antoliaho approaches spirituality.
It's participatory. He's not serving pre-cooked dogma. He's asking you to cook the truth yourself. Today, we're dissecting his reflection titled The Paradox of God. It is a short piece, but it is dense. It tackles the meeting point of science, spirituality, and self-awareness. Eloise, where do we even start with a guy who says that anyone claiming to know the full truth about God is speaking from illusion?
We start with the limits of the hardware. That's really his opening salvo. Antoliaho writes, "How can the finite explain the infinite? It's a question of scale. If you look at the history of cognitive science, or even evolutionary biology, our brains evolved to survive on the savanna. We are wired to categorize things. Is this a lion? Is this a fruit? Is this safe? We are designed to reduce complexity into manageable binaries."
Right. Survival depends on certainty. If I'm unsure whether that shadow's a predator, I die. So my brain craves a definitive answer.
Precisely. But Antoliaho argues that when we apply that same survival mechanism, that craving for a definite answer, to the concept of the divine, we create a fundamental error. He says, "How can a single mind, bound by language, memory, and fear, hold the total knowledge of a reality it did not create?" He's pointing out that our tools are insufficient. Language is a tool of separation. To name something is to say it is this and not that. But if God is infinite, how can you use a tool of limitation to describe him?
It reminds me of that old line, "The map is not the territory." But Antoliaho seems to go further. He's suggesting that religion, for many people, isn't about exploration. It's about comfort. He writes about how religions promise certainty, a God perfectly mapped, fully defined. Why is that promise so seductive?
Psychological safety. There's actually quite a bit of research on this. Studies in the psychology of religion often distinguish between intrinsic religiousness, which is about internalizing values, and a quest orientation, which is comfortable without. But the most popular form is often what psychologists call a need for closure. We see this in data regarding fundamentalism across all faiths. When the world feels chaotic, humans gravitate toward high control groups that offer rigid answers. Antoliaho calls this making the mystery manageable, safe, familiar.
He uses a striking image for that. He says when we do that, the story stops being a mirror and hardens into a wall. That is such a heavy critique. If the story is a mirror, I suppose it reflects my own nature, or perhaps it helps me see myself in relation to the divine. But a wall? A wall just stops you.
It stops you, and it divides you. If I have my wall of certainty and you have your wall of certainty, we aren't meeting. We're just fortifying our positions. But I want to pivot back to the philosophical roots here. Because while Antoliaho is a modern Filipino thinker, he's tapping into a very old, very sophisticated tradition called apophatic theology.
Okay, break that down. Apophatic?
It comes from the Greek apophosis, meaning denial or negation. It's often called the via negativa, or the negative way. The basic premise, which you find in the works of ancient thinkers like Pseudo-Dionysus, or even in Eastern Orthodox traditions, is that because God is transcendent, no positive statement you make can ever be truly accurate. If you say God is good, you are limiting God to your human understanding of goodness. So the only way to speak the truth about the divine is to say what God is not.
So God is not evil. God is not finite. God is not a toaster.
Essentially, but it goes deeper. You eventually have to strip away even the good concepts. You have to admit that God is not wise in the way a human is wise. God is not existent in the way a table exists. Antolie Howe is channeling this when he writes, "Any description we give is already too small." He's aligning himself with the mystics who believe that true understanding only happens when you stop trying to define the subject.
This connects to his background as a writer of questions. I noticed that in his bio. He defines himself not by the answers he has, but by the questions he asks. That feels very countercultural in a world of influencers and gurus who all claim to have the secret sauce.
It is incredibly countercultural. We live in an information economy that rewards certainty. You don't get a million clicks by saying, "I don't know, but let's sit in silence together." You get clicks by saying, "Here are the 5 steps to enlightenment." Antolie Howe is pushing against the commodification of truth. He says truth is not owned, but realized. That word realized is crucial. It implies an internal shift, not an external acquisition.
Let's go back to the stone grill metaphor for a second, because I think it elucidates that distinction between owning and realizing. In a normal restaurant, you buy the meal. You own it. It's a transaction. In the stone grill experience, you are given the heat, the energy, and the raw material. And the meal only happens if you engage with it moment by moment. If you stop paying attention, the meat burns. If you don't cook it enough, it's raw. It requires awareness.
That is a brilliant connection. And look at his quote. "Awareness is the bridge between oneness and duality." That requires active participation. You have to be present. If you are just reciting a creed, if you are just eating the pre-cooked steak, you aren't using awareness. You are using memory. You are repeating a pattern. And Antolie Howe wants us to move from memory to immediacy.
But isn't that terrifying? I mean, let's play devil's advocate here. Religion provides structure. It provides community. It provides a moral framework. If we strip away the certainty, if we tear down the wall, don't we risk falling into nihilism? If we can't define God, why bother believing in anything?
That is the classic criticism of mysticism. If you deconstruct everything, what's left? But Antolie Howe answers this in the text. He doesn't say we should stop seeking. He says we should change how we seek. He writes, "Perhaps the honest path is not to cling to perfect answers, but to walk with a humble question." He's replacing a static fortress with a journey. It's not nihilism, it's humility. Nihilism says there is no truth. Antolie Howe is saying the truth is so big that your current cup cannot hold it.
So it's an expansion rather than a negation. He proposes a shift from, "I know what God is," to, "Whatever the truth is, let it find me changing." That phrase, "let it find me changing," really stuck with me. It implies that I am the variable, not the constant.
Yes. Dogma assumes the believer is a finished product who just needs to accept the correct data. Antolie Howe assumes the believer is a process. And if you are a process, you need a relationship with the infinite that allows for growth, for error, for revision. If your God is a statue carved in stone, the statue cannot grow. If your God is, as he puts it, consciousness itself, then there is room for infinite expansion.
I want to touch on the scientific angle here. His bio mentions exploring the meeting point of spirituality, science, and self-awareness. How does this view of an undefinable God mesh with science? Because usually we think of science as the pursuit of hard definitions.
Actually, modern physics is looking more and more like apophatic theology every day. Look at quantum mechanics. When you get down to the fundamental building blocks of reality, certainty dissolves. Heisenberg's uncertainty principle tells us we cannot know both the position and momentum of a particle simultaneously. We have wave-particle duality, where light is both a wave and a particle, depending on how you measure it. Science has had to become very comfortable with paradox.
So the scientists are actually ahead of the theologians in accepting that reality doesn't fit in a neat box.
In some ways, yes. The materialist view of the 19th century, that the universe is a clockwork machine we can fully explain, is dead. It's been dead for 100 years. We now know the universe is probabilistic, entangled, and deeply mysterious. When Antolí Hau talks about the invisible bridge between matter and meaning, he's speaking a language that resonates with systems theory and consciousness studies. There is a recognition that the observer, the consciousness, is integral to reality.
Which brings us back to his line, "Meet God not in the sky, but in consciousness itself." This is a shift from an external deity, the old man in the clouds, to an internal reality. Historically, this has always been a tension point, hasn't it? The institutional church versus the internal mystic.
Always. And it's usually a bloody history. The institution relies on external authority. The bishop, the book, the building. The mystic relies on internal authority. The experience, the insight, the awareness. Antolí Hau is firmly in the mystic camp. He explicitly says his thoughts are not doctrine, not instruction, not authority. He is disclaiming the power that religious leaders usually try to hoard.
He's democratizing the divine. He's saying, I'm not the gatekeeper. There is no gate. You're already inside.
And that is dangerous to institutions. But it is incredibly liberating for the individual. It removes the middleman. If God is in consciousness and you have consciousness, then you have direct access. You don't need the menu. You have the ingredients right there.
I love that we keep coming back to the food metaphors, but it fits. You know, there's a nuance in his text about language that I want to drill into. He says, our language reaches upward like a child's hand toward the sky, sincere but never complete. It's a very tender image. He's not mocking religion. He's not mocking the attempt to define God. He's calling it sincere.
That's a vital distinction. He isn't an atheist saying God is a delusion, and he isn't an anti-theist saying religion is poison. He's saying that our religious expressions are adorable, but inadequate, like a toddler drawing a picture of their parents. The drawing is full of love. It's sincere. It captures something of the feeling, but you wouldn't use it as a photo ID. The problem arises when we take the toddler's drawing and say, this is the absolute photographic truth of what the parent looks like, and if you disagree, you're wrong.
That is such a helpful analogy. It allows us to respect our traditions, the rituals, the scriptures, the songs, as those sincere reachings without being enslaved by them. We can love the drawing without confusing it for the person.
Exactly. And this leads to the final and perhaps most powerful line of his reflection. I do not know, but I am listening. Think about the cultural impact if that was the stance of our major religious and political leaders.
It would be a completely different world. I do not know is usually seen as weakness. In politics, if you say, I don't know, you're finished. In the pulpit, if you say, I don't know, people might stop tithing. We pay people to know.
We pay them to pretend to know. That's the difference. Antolí Hau is suggesting that real spiritual maturity is the capacity to tolerate ambiguity. It's what the poet Keats called negative capability, the ability to be in uncertainties, mysteries, doubts, without any irritable reaching after fact and reason. I do not know, but I am listening, is a posture of active receptivity. It's the stone grill heating up, waiting for the ingredients.
It's active silence. It's not just shutting up, it's tuning in. I'm curious, Eloise, how do you think this philosophy translates to the everyday person? We aren't all philosophers or mystics. We have jobs, kids, bills. How does a regular person live inside the mystery when they have to get the kids to school by 8 a.m.?
I think it changes how you handle stress and conflict. If you release the need for absolute certainty, you become less brittle. When things go wrong, when the plan fails, when suffering happens, you don't shatter as easily because your faith wasn't built on a rigid contract that said, if I do X, God must do Y. You are more fluid. You can look at a difficult situation and say, I don't know why this is happening, but I am listening for what it can teach me. It turns life from a test you have to pass into a dialogue you are having.
A dialogue between energy and emotion. That's another phrase of his. It really does strip away the fear. If I don't have to defend a system, I have a lot more energy to actually love people.
And that is the ultimate legacy of this kind of thinking. Whether it's the Sufi poets like Rumi, or Christian mystics like Meister Eckhart, or a modern Filipino inker like Ninok Santolihau, the destination is always the same.
When the walls of dogma come down, the only thing left is unity. He calls it rediscovering the unity beneath apparent separation. That is the end game. Not being right, but being one.
It's a beautiful vision, and it brings us full circle to the restaurant. You sit at a table, you share a meal. The distinctions between people, their politics, their jobs, tend to fade when you're breaking bread, or in this case, searing wagyu. The sensory experience of the now overrides the theoretical divisions of the mind.
The sensory is the gateway to the spiritual. That's the invisible bridge. You don't think your way to God. You sense your way there through awareness.
Ninox Antaliha's work is a reminder that the most sacred things are often the ones we can't quite articulate. We try, we write, we speak, but eventually we have to just be. For those listening, maybe the challenge this week is to catch yourself when you try to build a wall. When you feel that urge to be absolutely certain, maybe take a breath and try the other phrase instead. I do not know, but I am listening. Eloise, thank you for unpacking the infinite with me today.
Always a pleasure to explore the mystery with you.